There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes it home.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again, and welcome to our first episode of 2022. My guest today, Bonnie Duran, is an author and cancer survivor. She has two science fiction novels to her credit. Her recent release is Terror on Targus 3, an adventure that explores the self-perceived inadequacies of a linguist hired to establish communication with an alien race. Her devotional book, Cancer Warriors, 52 Devotions for Cancer Patients and Those Who Love Them, is based on her experiences battling melanoma. Bonnie has been married for 38 years to her mad scientist husband, who works with lasers and owns a 2,300-pound electromagnet. Good morning, Bonnie. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Good morning. Great to talk to you, Patty. We've been friends forever, but let's get this party started.
Definitely. Well, since we live on completely opposite ends of the state, Bonnie, I just hardly ever get to see you unless we catch up at a conference or something. And of course, in-person conferences have been non-existent for the past couple of years. So hoping that maybe in this new year, we can get together again somewhere.
I sure hope so. It's been a long time. Oh, I miss all my writing friends.
Yes, it's been pretty wild to not be able to actually communicate in person and do our conferences like we have been. Well, Bonnie, would you tell us what childhood experiences motivated you toward a career in writing? Were you the type of kid that just couldn't wait for the teacher to assign an essay in school, or did writing become a part of your life later on?
Later on, but I really was discouraged in first grade when I overheard a teacher at a open house thing tell my mom that, well, she writes well, but she doesn't capitalize the letter I. So that discouraged me forever until fifth or sixth grade. I wrote a poem, which is not my genre, on the planet Mercury. And that was published in an anthology at my elementary school. So that was a big encouragement to me.
That's pretty neat. It sounds like you kind of had an interest in the whole other planets and science thing long before you met your mad scientist husband then.
That's true. I started reading science fiction in elementary school, and I'm trying to think of the title of it. It was by Robert Heinlein, and it was called Space Cadet. So from that moment on, I read whatever science fiction books I could find, and then I was on my way. My next stage in writing, I didn't know there was anything else. I started working in junior high and high school for the school newspapers and kind of honed some of my skills there.
Excellent. And that is, a lot of times, that's a springboard for a lot of young writers to write for their school newspapers. Like you, Bonnie, I can remember being quite fascinated with, oh my goodness, the stars and the planets and basic astronomy and things like I never wrote along that line. But I'm curious to know, were you into the sci-fi TV shows like Star Trek and Lost in Space and all that?
Yes, Lost in Space and others. I didn't watch Star Trek because it was past my bedtime. That was in, yeah, what can I say? I caught up with it and have loved the series ever since. And all of the, you know, remakes of everything,
sure.
New programs.
I was a Star Trek fan for the first series. After they got into Voyager and Deep Space Nine and all that, I had kind of lost interest, I guess. My thing back in the day was Westerns, and my thing today still is Westerns. So I kind of veered off. When I was a kid, I was into both of them, and then I kind of got more into the Western genre more than the sci-fi. But, oh my goodness, every once in a while I'll see on my TV guide thing like Lost in Space or something, and it's like, wow, it'd be fun to watch one of those episodes again just to bring back those childhood memories of those stories, because they were fascinating back then and probably still are. So I guess that pretty much
yes.
answers the question of why science fiction is your genre of choice. Is just something that you've always been interested in from the time you were young.
That's about it. I watched Lost in Space. We have the entire series. We have the entire old series of Star Trek and movies all over the place in our house.
Tell us about your latest release, Terror on TARDIS 3. I love that title.
That was a title that my husband suggested. It sounds like something from the 50s, and
yeah.
That's what he enjoys reading. The book took a long time to write, and I can tell you the whole story about the journey there. But basically, it explores an idea of what can aliens teach us about God. That was kind of the seed for the story, and then I went off from there. It's like, okay, if humans are going to visit an alien planet, how are they going to get there? Because it takes light years. I, of course, followed one science fiction gimmick, which is a wormhole, basically a tunnel in space to go from one point to another. So I used that and used my mad scientist friends and husband to get something that sounded at least plausible. And then there's been speculation or theories about that, but also about a space elevator. So how do you get into space to get onto the hypership that goes through the wormhole? And that thing is essentially what it sounds like. It elevates a vehicle from ground floor to a space, a platform that's outside our orbit, and solves some problems as far as gravity stuff. But it was fun to ride.
Oh, I can imagine, Bonnie. And you know, in my opinion, the world building in a futuristic setting is just an amazing creative talent. It's not something that anybody can do. And I wondered, you explained a little bit just now, where do you draw your ideas for the futuristic technology? Where did you get the idea without giving too much away of the book, of course, because we want people to read it. But one of the big issues with the aliens was the color scheme, all the colors. And I was like, where did you come up with that, you know?
Well, there were some colors I was told not to use by friends. For instance, don't use the color blue because that's been used in Avatar. So that's old school.
Yeah.
I don't know where I came up with the lizard skin and all of that. And it's their eyes that are most intriguing feature. Yes.
Because they say too much. I'll let you say what you want.
Well, they convey the alien emotion, and the whole society is very ritualistic. I don't know where I picked. I guess what I was thinking of is how formal the Japanese are. I watched Japanese, I assumed it was family members meeting each other in the airport, okay. And it was all bowing. There was no physical contact. So the linguist has to learn how to do these specific hand gestures and bowing to show respect, to get the message that she wants to say across. And she has certain problems along the way, and I won't give up what happens there. But, yeah, she fails miserably.
Well, I wonder, too, it would be awfully hard to go to a library and research this stuff. And say, what would happen if? But you're very fortunate in that you have a family member who can kind of give you a basis for, no, this couldn't possibly happen, or yes, this is feasible. See what I'm saying?
Yes. We worked out how a wormhole would work and what I could get away with. It's theory, so I can play with it.
Mm-hmm.
The space elevator was the same way. And there was a place where I had to find out about heat exhaustion and heat stroke, because that was one thing that my characters experienced. The planet is very much of a desert, so being out of the area is not, being out in the sun is not a good thing. I also researched agoraphobia, because that's one thing that the protagonist has, which is essentially a fear of open places, a fear of just about everything else. And she's going to have a problem going into space with that.
Yes, and I thought you did a very good job with that, Bonnie.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was interesting to write. That's about all I'm going to say about wormholes and space elevators and deserts that are very likely to kill you if you don't watch it.
Yeah. As I was reading the book, I just felt so bad for her when she's in that desert situation. I'm like, oh my, because I'm a person who can't stand the heat. So I was really hurting for this poor lady when she was in the situation that she was. I'll say no further, but anyway, it was like, oh, that would have been just so awful. So, yeah, you said that you would like to convey your thoughts about how we would relate to another person as far as their faith. And something else that came through very strong to me was that, again, without trying to give away too much of the story, there was an element of an addiction involved in that story, too, which plays a big part.
Oh, you mean the villain?
Deanna's addiction, yes, and the way that the villain works on her psychologically to get her addicted.
Yes.
He plays on her insecurities.
Oh, yeah, because he wanted her to fail.
Yes.
And it fit into his bent on things and what he wanted to happen. But, yeah, he was pretty nasty, as she found out as the story went along.
Right, and yet he's one of those people that is just so charming and so endearing that you could easily be lured into his game without even realizing it. So,
yeah, he played on that too.
Well, Bonnie, I know you have an exciting event coming up to be held on the 15th of January. Tell us about that.
It's what I'm calling the book launch party. It is on January 15th, which is a Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m., and it's at a place called the Real Event Center, which is in Littleton, Colorado, about C-470 and Kipling, if you know that area. And it's called the Real, R-E-E-L, event center because it's owned by a group called the Goldberg brothers own it. And they were involved in making the movie reels that the movies were wound on.
Oh, wow.
I think it was starting in the 40s, and they are still doing that. Yeah, and my publisher rents space in that building, so he's the one who told me about it. I'm going to have appetizers available, and next door is the behind-the-scenes tap house, which, you know, everything is movie-themed there. So they are available. They can provide appetizers as part of the package.
Very nice. Well, it sounds like fun. And if I didn't live so far away, I'd get up there.
I know.
This sounds like a really fun event, Bonnie, and I wish you the very best with it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And certainly any of your listeners who are interested, they can find out more if they email me. That's probably the best way. Or just show up.
Yeah, definitely. At this point, we're going to take a short break, and this is where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Bonnie Duran. Bonnie has written two science fiction books, and we've been discussing her latest one, Terror on Targus 3, which released just recently. She's going to be holding a book launch party on the 15th of January, and we just discussed the details of that. If you'd like to listen to this show again, or we hope you will refer it to friends and family, go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That is spelled pattisheene.com. You'll find this show on the very front page of the website for a few weeks, but I'd like you really to go to the Blog Talk Radio tab, because there you will find a listing of all our shows, and also under each show is a more information tab, and that's where you will find Bonnie's website, which is BonnieDuranBooks.com, and also Bonnie has a newsletter sign up. I'll put that on there, and actually I can go ahead and put the information about the launch party right on my website as well, so that if folks go over there and want to recall what was said about the launch party, that information will be available there as well. Bonnie also is a cancer survivor, and we will be discussing that during the second half of our show today. So Bonnie, let's talk about that. You wrote a book titled Cancer Warriors, More Than One, 52 Devotions for Cancer Patients and Those Who Love Them. Tell us about your cancer experience and what you'd like to share with listeners today.
Well, it was a long road and really threw me for a loop, to say the least. It started with a mole on my upper arm that started bleeding when I showered off. And my husband says, oh, you should have that looked at. And it's like, oh, yeah.
Someday.
And then another friend says, you should really have someone look at that. And by that time, it had gotten a little bigger. Contacted my doctor, who took a sample, who contacted a dermatologist to make an appointment with him, and he sent me directly to a cancer specialist. That was the start. Had a surgery to remove it and some materials around it to get clear margins, as they call it. The next year, it showed up again. And they said, oh, well, and 7 lymph nodes were taken out as well. And there was a bit of that original melanoma that was hiding in one of the lymph nodes. So they took that out and cut quite a bit out of my arm. I saw the pathology report somehow by mistake, and it was 6 inches long, 4 inches wide, and up to an inch deep.
Oh, my goodness, Bonnie.
Yeah, so you would think at that point it would be all gone. But the few months later, my oncologist says, well, you know, you're clear, but we want to do some immunotherapy just in case, extra insurance. And that's a new way of dealing with cancer. It ramps up the immune system to fight the cancer rather than chemotherapy that attacks the cancer itself and is a little harder on the body. So I had two treatments a couple weeks apart. Hey, no problem. The following treatment, the nurse says, well, I told you to call us if you had a rash developing, and you have a rash developing. That's the first sign of an allergic reaction.
Oh, no.
So they took me off the drug, and boy, every side effect known to man showed up. And that was about 6 weeks of horrid side effects.
Oh, goodness, Bonnie.
Couldn't keep anything down, couldn't keep anything in one way or the other, got very weak. John at one point had to help me up the stairs because we have three floors. And guess where our bedroom was?
Of course.
And just miserable. And I found out later that there is something called chemo brain. I couldn't look at the television. I couldn't look at emails. I think by the time I got to them, it was 1300 all sitting there waiting for me. Yeah, it was just, oh, I know. I read the Harry Potter series, didn't retain any of it, even though I had read it several times. It was just horrible, as you might imagine. John kept feeding me Ensure and Gatorade, which I got really sick of.
I can imagine.
But the last straw was when John just said, I'm taking you to the emergency. I was too weak to climb the stairs. And he says, if you fall, I can't lift you.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to emergency, got in a wheelchair. I think we waited like 6 or 7 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
The problem was it was Monday night, and shootings and stabbings happen. So I had to wait. Got to the exam room, more waiting, blood tests, urine samples. I was so dehydrated, I couldn't give them much. And one thing or another, in the middle of all of this, four friends, writing friends, met me at the hospital and prayed for me.
That was very special to have your friends supporting you like that, Bonnie.
Yes, it was. You know, I couldn't have gotten through it. And, you know, God answered prayer. The next thing was the doctor finally examines me and starts to feel my feet, which were so swollen with edema that I couldn't wear shoes. I had rash that was all over my body. And she's, you know, looking at me hither and yon and says, well, all your symptoms are consistent with low thyroid.
Oh, my.
And that was such a shock because it's like, you mean it would have been so simple to solve this?
Exactly.
So she says, well, you know, let's test this out. I'll give you a shot of steroid, I think it was. And if that if that helps, then we know that's the problem. And sure enough, I started feeling better, and the doctor gave me a high dose of levothyroxine, which is the standard drug.
Right.
Went to my medical doctor in the snow. My feet were so swollen that I could only wear a double pair of socks, so of course they soaked through. And yeah, it was one thing after another, but got the pills and it went on from there. And actually, from that moment on, I started improving. At one point, I'm thinking, gee, I walked down the stairs without taking them one step at a time. And I hadn't even thought about it. So, you know, I started improving. That was March to April. The Writers' Conference, Colorado Christian Writers' Conference, was in May, mid-May, and I just had to make my apologies because I really didn't want to deal with the after effects and at altitude, which always gets me.
Yeah,
even though I live at 5,000 feet.
Yeah, but that's just far because up there quite a bit higher than that, so I can understand that.
Yeah, they're about 8,000 feet.
Yeah. When did this all start for you? This wasn't recent.
No, that was 2014 when they did the first surgery.
That's
2015 when I had the second surgery. 2016 when I had that immunotherapy that I was allergic to. And at that point, if I continue, you know, this is a long saga. So if you have the time, I'll give it to your ears.
That's fine. I'd like to hear as much as you'd like to share, Bonnie, to be honest, because I'm sure our listeners would too.
Well, at that point, after my first immunotherapy, I was sent to the University of Colorado Medical Center in Anschutz, and it is one of the top hospitals in the area. As it turned out, my oncologist that I was referred to is one of the top melanoma specialists in the world. So he took a look at things, thought that maybe this immunotherapy was still working. So we waited a few months, nice to finally have some reprieve from everything. And then we started a clinical trial, which included three immunotherapy drugs to see if they work better together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that did bad things to my liver and to my sodium levels.
Oh,
and the sodium thing was, yeah, the sodium thing was serious. That landed me in the hospital for a couple nights. So we get over that. And, okay, we're going to try another immunotherapy. And that one had few side effects, I mean, like fatigue, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on that for a year and a half, I think. Stopped in 2018, and I've been cancer-free ever since.
Oh, praise God for that. But boy, you sure went through an ordeal there, huh? It wasn't something that was over in a few months. This was a matter of years for you.
It sure seemed like it. But yeah, it started in 2014.
And you were telling me just before the show started that you're 4 years cancer-free now, so that sure is a blessing.
It certainly is. I get checked regularly, like with CT scans and such, but so far, I mean, with this immunotherapy drug, the survival rate, which I hate that word, has changed from chemotherapy from 6 to 9 months to today, it's 10 to 12 years.
Oh, that's a huge improvement.
That's how fast things have changed in the medical field. And this drug was only, the first drug, immunotherapy, was only approved in 2011.
You wrote the devotional based on your own experiences, but I'm curious to know, Bonnie, if you also solicited input from other cancer, like you say, we hate that word, cancer survivors, people who had experienced cancer, or were all 52 devotionals written by you?
I wrote all 52. At the back of the book, I list a number of resources, and some of them were cancer survivors that had started email newsletters and that kind of thing. They had written one had written a number of devotionals in her own right. I read those, so that helped me to craft mine.
Mm-hmm.
But now, up to that point, I had written 69 devotions for various magazines and stuff. The Lord had kind of given me training to do this.
Right. And I like the fact, Bonnie, that in your book, your devotions, as the title bears out, devotions for cancer patients and those who love them, because a lot of times the family members are, even close friends, are very deeply affected by a person's cancer experience. So I like that you put that emphasis on your book as well, on those devotionals.
Yeah, I mean, my husband went through the whole thing with me and trying to find food I could eat, giving me Gatorade and Ensure until it was coming out of my ears. Pizza was not the best choice, but, you know, you do what you can do. And as I say, he lived through it with me. Yeah, people saw me at my worst. One friend said, "I thought you were going to die." I'm so glad she didn't say that while I was so sick.
Because you probably would have thought you were right.
I sure felt like that at one point, mm-hmm. and, you know, still weak from the aftermath. But people still ask me, "Well, how are you feeling?" And it's like, I feel fine. You know, I might have gained weight from the pandemic, but otherwise, I'm just fine.
Well, how did your diagnosis and subsequent challenges affect your faith journey, Bonnie? And I didn't ask you this earlier, but I assume that you have always had a strong faith basis in your life, which isn't necessarily true. Some people don't really develop a strong faith until later in life. Some people grow up in a very Christian home. I didn't ask you about that, but surely this had to have affected your faith journey to some degree, either strengthened it or you started saying, "Hey, God, what's going on here?"
Well, that's exactly what I was saying. At one point, I was screaming at God saying, "Why?" Which is a pretty, you know, common reaction, and
yes,
God can take screaming. So, you know, I was just, as I say, it was miserable, and there's probably a few words that are more appropriate, but we won't put them on radio. But somewhere in the middle, as I was praying that, God gave me the impression that he was going to use this to bless others, and I certainly couldn't see it at the time. At one point, I was rebellious. It's like, I am not going to write a devotional book about my experiences. I have to relive the whole thing. I had to reread my journal entries, and I'm not going to do this.
You didn't want to revisit that pain?
I did not. I was adamant I was not going to write it. And then I had an agent who had been marketing the Terror on Targus 3 book. We parted ways because he couldn't sell it. And so I was kind of adrift. What do I do now writing-wise? Do I push it myself? Do I do this, that? Do I work on something else? And it was kind of, well, you know, I want you to write this devotional. I was like, okay, yeah. At any rate, that's how it started. And the following year, I think it was finished. And then I connected with a publisher at a writer's conference, thinking, you know, I'm just kind of done with chasing publishers and stuff. So this was what's called a hybrid publisher. They combine the best points of self-publishing, where you do everything yourself, and traditional publishing, which is, we'll do all the work for you, the cover art, the copy editing, the proofreading, which is not my favorite place. And after all of that is done, the book is yours. The profits are yours.
Yes.
So that was the journey. It came out, it was January or February, and I'm blanking on, oh yeah, it was 2020. I had a book launch party at a pizza place, and that went well, and thought, okay, I'm taking a month off because I really pushed this story. I'll hit it in another month, and then pandemic.
Yeah, and that kind of put the kibosh on an awful lot of people's plans.
Yeah, at that point, I just didn't feel like doing anything.
What kind of cancer warning signs do you think a person, or do you know, actually, that a person should look for when melanoma is suspected?
Well, for me, it was a mole that, A, was bleeding, which I didn't understand that at the time, but also it started to grow. And that was a big warning flag. I've had cousin and such that had a growth on his forehead that was cancerous. Frankly, your skin isn't just on the outside. So melanoma can hit just about anywhere.
That is very interesting.
Yeah, and one thing I would say is get thee to a dermatologist and have regular checkups.
Yeah, don't wait and say, oh, well, I'll do it someday. Yeah.
Exactly. A friend of mine, you know, said, oh, it's a basal cell. I have them removed all the time. Well, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that threw me for a loop because I didn't expect something that needed surgery and immunotherapy and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounded like it became quite more of a deal than you had anticipated at first, for sure.
Oh, yes. Yes, with a capital Y-E-S.
Well, you're going through this. You said you had supportive family and friends. What do you recommend to people who do have a loved one or a friend who is experiencing this kind of thing? And what kind of support is the most effective, do you think, for a cancer patient?
For one, I asked one friend to just sit with me. And others had offered, you know, well, let me bring a meal over. Well, they, you know, in much of that, it's like ask the person what they can tolerate.
Yes.
Or, you know, give some advice on what. In one case, a friend of mine came over and she brought us soup, which I enjoyed, and she also made a smoothie. The problem with the smoothie was we didn't check to see that the blender was on tight.
Oh, dear.
The ceiling ate well that day.
Oh, my.
But one friend came over and made egg drop soup and sat there while I and watched me eat it all. I still have the recipe, and I enjoy that. And it was her own broth that she made herself. I mean, that's real service. I would say just ask them what they need and what they can tolerate. One friend suggested, you know, sweet potatoes go over kind of the stomach. So I did that. And sometimes getting to the appointments, much of the time for when I was taking the good immunotherapy, I could drive myself. But I had appointments earlier that I couldn't. And friend offered to take me because, you know, John was working. He's not always available at a drop of a hat.
Right.
But he would always come with me when we met with the oncologist and heard the report. It's like, okay, let me show you the CT scan, and this is the one that you had last time, and this is the one you had this time, and it is shrinking, you know, and just we'll keep on keeping on. You know, I waited for his coming in every 3 months and saying, no cancer. One time he came in, he had endorsed my book, and he came in just gushing about the book. And John and I are sitting there going, well, can you tell us no cancer? I mean, okay.
We're glad you liked the book, but tell me about me.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Funny, I think another important thing, too, is that when you do make contact with a cancer patient, you're going to go visit that person or whatever, have the courtesy to call them out ahead of time and see if it's a convenient time. Because I had a friend here recently who was experiencing cancer, and there were times when I would send her a text and say, would you like me to come visit? And she'd say, no, not really, not today. I'm exhausted. I really don't want company. I mean, she wasn't that blunt about it. But I think you have to consider that you're thinking, oh, this person isn't feeling well. They'd probably enjoy some company. But there's some days when, no, I really don't want anybody around. Just leave me alone. Thank you for caring, but don't come over, you know. And I think that it's easy to forget that.
But it's also on the patient themselves, because I didn't call enough friends. In one case, I said, you know, can you come over? And the gal just, you know, dropped everything and came over. But I wasn't really good at asking for help. And that is, I think, something that a cancer patient needs to keep in mind. People are willing to help, but they don't know how. Be proactive and let them know.
That's an excellent point, Bonnie, and thank you for sharing that. So tell us, project in mind regarding your cancer experience, or are we going to get another sci-fi book from you, or what's in your future?
Well, I hope in my future is a sequel to Terror on Targus 3.
Oh, great. Okay.
I had started the book and plotted it out and wrote a number of chapters, which, you know, it's been years. I'll probably have to revisit that, but I've had fun playing with the science on that. There's something called Hilbert space, which is theorized about multiple dimensions, basically.
Ooh.
And
that's always fascinating.
I'm going to use it.
Cool. And I didn't mention to listeners, I don't think I even mentioned it in your introduction, Bonnie, you also wrote another book called Dark Biology, and that came out, what, a couple of years ago?
I think it was 2013.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I don't think I ever read that one. I'll have to go back and get a copy of that and read it.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Yes, especially in view of the coronavirus, because it involves a runaway virus on the International Space Station, right?
Yes, and a friend of mine read that and says, oh, this is too close to reality. It happens on some of it happens on the International Space Station, and I was very fortunate to make contact with a former astronaut candidate who read through the novel and said, okay, yeah, this is exactly right, and no, this would not work. And one time he says, okay, we need to work on this. Call me, and we'll figure it out.
Neat.
So it's like, I'm talking to a real astronaut.
Oh, that would be such fun, though. Well, Bonnie, it's been a pure delight to have you visit with us today. I knew the whole science fiction genre thing would be interesting, and I also, of course, realized that you had so much to share with us with your cancer experience, and thank you for sharing that, because that's very personal, and I appreciate you being willing to share that with our listeners, because I'm sure that there's many out there who will benefit from what you had to say.
Well, I hope so. That's the reason I wrote that cancer devotional. I was praying that it would get into the right hands. And many times as a writer, you don't hear from readers to know what they thought. But yeah, it's kind of in the Lord's hands, as everything is, writing or otherwise.
That's exactly right, yes. And he knows who needs to benefit from your book, and hopefully he has his ways. We know he has his ways of getting it into the right hands. So God bless you for being obedient and pursuing that undertaking, Bonnie.
Well, thank you.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Don't forget to go to pattysheen.com. That's PattiSheene.com. You'll find there a Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page, and that will give you links to all of the shows we have recorded to date, and also under each one is a more information tab. Check out Bonnie Duran Books, which is Bonnie's website. She also has a newsletter sign up, and she has her 3 books listed there. So if you like science fiction, I'm sure you would enjoy these books. And if you have had any experience with cancer as either a cancer patient yourself or a person who has a loved one or a friend with cancer, her 52 devotionals would be an inspiration to you. Thank you for spending time with us. Until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glare.